to the Radio Life Sciences Podcast for a behind-the-scenes look into GSLS, made by students and educators for the scientists of tomorrow.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to our Radio Life Sciences Our Education podcast. My name is Gisela, and I am here with...
I'm Maarke. Hi.
And today we welcome Chantal Tux. Welcome, Chantal. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Chantal is an associate professor at the Image Sciences Institute, and she is also the program coordinator of our master's program, Medical Imaging. And you also supervise PhD students within the Imago program, if I'm saying that correctly. And you coordinate and teach the course Medical Imaging Techniques for the bachelor's program Biomedical Sciences.
Yes.
So quite a lot of education. We didn't randomly invite you for this episode because you also recently won a prestigious research grant. So congratulations for that.
Thank you.
But we will zoom in on this later on in the episode. First, we always have one question that we ask our guests. Who was your most memorable teacher and why?
Right, yeah. So I think the first person that really inspired me to go into the STEM field, or the exact sciences, was my mathematics teacher at high school. So he was very structured, very good at explaining the exciting part of mathematics. So that's where I got really that interest. And then at university, I had a professor in medical imaging. So I studied in Eindhoven at the Technical University. I had a professor in medical imaging who was so enthusiastic about this field and knew how to convey that very well. So he really sparked my interest into medical imaging. And I've been doing that ever since.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. And are there any characteristics of those teachers that you also try to apply in your teaching and supervising?
Yeah, I think really the enthusiasm for your topic of research or of teaching. So medical imaging is really my passion. So I really, with examples, I try to bring that across to the students and also involve them or talk about the latest research in my classes from time to time, or so showing images, because that's obviously very visual medical imaging. So I think I really got that. I really took that away from those who inspired me.
Yeah.
Cool. And just for some of our listeners who aren't really aware of what medical imaging is, can you give a few examples of what a medical imaging entails, what it looks like?
Yeah, so it's actually all the radiological imaging modalities that you can find in the hospital. So many people think about when you have to go to the hospital to get an image. So it's typically these big devices, tunnels that you're moved into, and that can either be an MRI system or a CT system, or you also have the Röntgen or X-ray system. So if you break a bone, you have to go to the hospital and get a picture taken. Or you sometimes have to inject some contrast agent inside your veins, and then you can make other types of images. So medical imaging really captures the physics of all those imaging systems, as well as the working with the images themselves. So making sure to, when you get an image, to get the most information out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think one of the things that students probably really like is that it's very applied and it's really impactful for patients.
Yeah. So it's incredibly multidisciplinary. This is also one of the things I like the most. So it's indeed applied to a very clear application. You work towards better diagnosis, better treatment monitoring of the patient. But underneath that is really the exact sciences, so the mathematics and the physics, chemistry, computer science. Yeah, so it's really applying all those fields to the medical field. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds really great.
Yeah, yeah. I'm also amazed by it. I wasn't aware about all of this myself, so it's good that we interview you today. Yeah, and like Gisella told in the beginning, we invited you because you got a grant, or you received a grant, and we would like to hear more about also what your work entails. You are also program coordinator for the Master's Medical Imaging, and we would like to know, what does the program entail, and which type of students are interested in this program?
Yeah, so in that respect, we have a little bit of a we look for a little bit different students, or with a different background than other master programs in the GSLS. So we're really focused on STEM students, so students with a background in engineering, science, mathematics, computer science, physics, and students that want to apply that multidisciplinary knowledge to the medical field. So the program really focuses on these two perspectives and the integration of that. So that being, on the one hand, the physics underlying all these medical imaging technologies. So how does an MRI scanner work? What principles underlie ultrasound imaging? So really knowing the physics underneath that. And on the other hand, the image processing. So that's more the computer science and the mathematics. So if you have an image, you can see that as a 2D mathematical function or a 3D mathematical function, and you can do all kinds of operations on that, like you do with Photoshop, for example. And machine learning plays an increasingly big role in that. And we want students to learn about both worlds, so the medical imaging principles as well as the medical image processing, to be able to optimize that whole process. So if you know what you want to see, or what you're looking for, or what the radiologist needs, then you can better adjust the way you make your images and adjust the pipeline for analysis accordingly. So it's really about the integration of those fields.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember that you told me once before already that a lot of you, like yourself, have a technical background or studied at a technical university. Is that also the type of students that you attract to the master's program then in the end? Or are there medical students that with like more biomedical background or a biology background that you also attract to the study?
Yeah, so we have an incredibly diverse range of students in our program, which is really exciting because everyone brings in something unique, their unique background. And also we see when those students work in groups, that works really well because they really come from different perspectives. So of course, we have students from physics or more the biomedical engineering, mathematics, computer science kind of background, but we also have students from biomedical sciences that took on some extra courses, for example, a more exact minor in physics or informatics, that are then eligible to join our program. So yeah, it's really those students also even that studied medicine, but then had, or technical medicine, but have shown that they have a good background also in the STEM field and the exact sciences. So yeah, it's very diverse, and we look on a case-by-case basis. We talk to students how they can best prepare for our master program to enroll.
Yeah. So if students are considering the master's, they can also contact you and talk about it?
Or? Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, we're really open to talk to everyone, see how their background fits and what they can do to be eligible for our program.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it sounds really like the master's program is really also about really learning how to innovate, mm-hmm. and how to apply these innovations to the field.
Yeah, exactly, because we have a very big research focus in the UMC in our department of imaging and oncology. So we have over 140 PhD students doing research in medical imaging, so it's really, really big. So we're also very closely associated to the PhD program of the medical imaging, IMAGO, that you mentioned before. So a lot of students that choose to proceed in academia, they come do PhD with us, but also students choose to go to industry elsewhere. But we have incredible amount of facilities within our department that the students really benefit from.
Yeah. Well, that immediately touches upon another question that we had, is that how does a typical graduate look like after the program? But yeah, from what you're telling us, they can end up at different spots, but most of them go into the PhD research.
I would say our numbers show it's approximately 50-50.
Mm, okay.
So 50% that continues to do a PhD, and the other 50% ends up in a research center or in an industry, sometimes not even related to medical imaging per se, but to image processing, because of course there are tremendous amount of fields that use these techniques, and they are technologically speaking, they are the same. So it doesn't really matter whether you apply to medical images or other kinds of images.
Right.
So there's, yeah, a lot of possibilities what you can do after the master with this background. And so we see, yeah, we really see that in our alumni, that they take advantage of those opportunities.
Next to your educational obligations, you also do research. Can you tell us more about your research, what it entails?
Yeah, so my research focuses on MRI, so magnetic resonance imaging. It's one of the medical imaging modalities where you have this really strong magnetic field, much more strong than the Earth magnetic field. We have scanners in the hospital that range from 1 Tesla to 7 Tesla. 7 Tesla is really more of a research scanner. And with this, we can make images of the body non-invasively.
And that's, so that's this big machine that you go into where you can have like no metal on your body, right?
Yeah, exactly. So an MRI machine is indeed this very big machine. So you get moved into this long tunnel, this bore, as quite claustrophobic. And then it starts making a lot of noise. So yeah, that machine for everyone that ever had a MRI scanner. Yeah.
Right.
And Gisella already introduced it in the beginning. So you won a prestigious award, a prestigious grant you got awarded, the VIDI grant. And this is a grant from the Dutch Research Council, or as we say in Dutch, the NWO. They give out three different types of grants. So the VENI, the VIDI, and the VICI for researchers in different stages of their career. And it's part of the so-called talent program. The VIDI grant is for researchers who have a few years of experience in the field after completing a PhD, which is the case for you. And we are wondering, what kind of project did you send in for this application?
Yeah, so maybe to add a little bit to my field of research, it really integrates those two fields that I talked about before. So the medical physics and the image processing. So I really try to bridge the gap, and also with the application to the medical world. And this particular grant is about also bridging those gaps again. So I talked about field strength before. So 7 Tesla being the strongest magnetic field that we have in the hospital for human imaging. And we have actually even stronger systems for smaller samples. So we're very fortunate to have a very strong system here at the Utrecht Science Park. It's 28 Tesla, so much stronger than the 7 Tesla for samples that are up to half a centimeter, 5 millimeter. So then I was really excited by the opportunities that this system provides. But then you start thinking, okay, how can I link imaging with such strong fields to my daily job, where I work mostly with human data? How can I bridge that gap? And then I came across this really unique model systems that are called organoids, which are essentially 3D, very complicated cell cultures that try to mimic real organs. So you have organoids, for example, for brain and for kidney, but also for different tumor types. And so the idea arose to image those organoids with MRI and then try to translate that to human imaging. And in that way, try to optimize our MRI techniques to be able to measure more efficiently in patients.
Oh, wow. Because how do scientists now image these organoids? Do they use different techniques?
Yeah, so indeed, now they are mostly imaged with microscopy techniques, which are destructive some of the time. So you cannot really do anything else anymore with the organoid. MRI is then one of the techniques that you can both apply in those organoids as well as in living humans. So that could really be a translation. And these systems, they are very valuable to also test things like treatment response monitoring. So you can even grow them from individual patients. I'm not an organoid expert, by the way. I'm the medical imaging is my my field of study. But really, when talking to these researchers, you learn a lot about how and why these organoids are used, and then thinking about what can you do with actually performing MRI on these organoids, and how can it be useful to translate it back to medical imaging in humans.
Yeah, because I've heard of organoids being cultured from, for example, tumors from patients, and then they test certain treatments on it, and then they can see which treatment is the best for a patient before treating the patient themselves. But this way you would be able to really image that as well and still continue using the organoid after the imaging.
Yeah, and hopefully find the imaging markers that best reflect success or failure, for example, of a treatment.
Right.
And then also apply that to humans, or maybe find the most efficient short imaging protocol so that we can shorten the exams for patients, which also should reduce the burden on the healthcare.
Ah, so it could work and in favor of the patient treatment, but also in favor of improving MRI techniques.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm mostly focusing on that. But on the other hand, it could also be informative for organoid researchers who may be interested in how different aspects of their model systems are reflective of what is happening in humans, which we can then also image.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, that sounds really amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, I think you're working in a multidisciplinary setting because you're working with the people that create the organoids and have experience in that way. Is there a particular field that you're looking at with this grant?
Yeah, so ultimately I will apply this in pediatric brain tumor patients. We try to study the organoids as well as patients. So really translate the methodology that we developed, the optimized MRI protocols, translate that to human imaging in a pilot. Yeah.
Yeah.
And how did you come up with the idea for this project?
So for me, it was always really helpful to have like this dot on the horizon. So if I ever retire, I want to have achieved this, or I want to have contributed this. And so working towards that, so when you come across different scientific hurdles that you cannot solve in your current project, you start to inventorize like what kind of techniques are there out there, what kind of other fields could I dive into to get to that point where I can solve this particular problem. So I really like to dive into these different fields and to integrate this multidisciplinary environment. And I learned about this very strong field system and how to use that, and that I can also image organoids with that. So we actually did some pilot experiments. And I also want to combine it with mathematical modeling and doing simulations. So to really close that whole loop from my MRI measurements. And if I then put these organoids in the microscope and I see what the structure is, can I then predict the MRI signal with simulations, and how well does that match the signal that I actually measured. So to really close this validation loop and to validate the techniques that we are working on for human.
Wow. And how much work is it to apply for such a grant? What do you have to do? Because I think it's probably not just write a research proposal and hand it in or something, right? These larger grants take more time.
Yeah, it's a really time-consuming process. So in this particular case, you have different stages. So you have a pre-proposal stage, which is judged solely on the CV. So about 20%, I think, of applicants get selected for the pre-proposal. And then they are invited to write a full proposal, which is some 6-7 pages of research proposal. And so really describe your idea into quite much detail and how you will mitigate risks. So if work package one fails, not the whole grant, your whole idea cannot be done anymore.
Right.
And another really important part is knowledge utilization. So how do you make sure that your results, that your research doesn't end up on the shelf somewhere gathering dust, but really that users, potential users like industry or clinicians can use the results. So you have to establish a user committee. So that's a really important part of the research proposal as well. You have to think about your team, about budgets, about who you will collaborate with. So that in itself is already a very lengthy process before you even have one word on paper away. And then it will go to expert reviewers in your field. They will write questions and comments, and you can write a rebuttal to that. And then you get invited to interview with 20 some people, experts, and not all in your field, but they are all researchers, and they will ask you questions about whatever they still want to know. And then you have to give a presentation and answer 20 minutes of questions. And then, someday after you get a phone call with hopefully good news that you can actually start the grant.
Wow, sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah, for 30 minutes of like in the pressure cooker and then having to present it, answer the questions and then know if you're going to get the grant or not.
Yeah, it's quite stressful, I would say.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. But in your case, you got rewarded with the grant. So that's a good thing. But it is a good thing. And I'm wondering, how does your work that you do for this project relate to your educational obligations? Is there any relation between those two?
Yeah, I think this project is really exciting in that it combines really these two fields that we also have a focus on in the master medical imaging, so the MRI physics, on the one hand, and the image processing, mathematical modeling, on the other hand. There's also some machine learning aspects in there. So this research really integrates those things. It also integrates quite a bit of biology, like microscopy imaging, learning about cells and these organoids, how they behave. So that multidisciplinary aspect is really reflected here, I think. And medical imaging is, I'm really passionate about the field and about bridging those gaps. So I can also use this example for students, for example, to tell them about what you could possibly do with this master.
Yeah, I think it's a really good mix of, and being able to do basic research, and if you're really passionate about physics or mathematics, that you can really apply these things to some real life problems and you can really make impact in people's lives.
Yeah, exactly.
And you look really passionate about it when you're speaking, so no, our listeners can't see this, but
definitely, that's true. So if there is any advice that you would be able to give people who are applying for such a grant, what would it be?
I think an important advice is to start early. So, because these ideas don't just come overnight. I think you really need 1 or maybe even 2 years to fine-tune it, to come across new techniques, to talk to lots of people, to get inspired at conferences, and really slowly start developing an idea for a bigger grant like this, and get the people involved also that you want to collaborate with, get some pilot data. I think it should be something that you're really passionate about, and it really helped me indeed to have this dot on the horizon. Like, I want to go there. This is going to be the next step to get there. And look at the bigger picture, like how would this step fit in what the community is working towards, or big problems, in this case in healthcare, like the healthcare burden is a big problem. So how can it contribute to that?
Yeah, so you look at your own dot on the horizon, your own motivators for what you want to achieve, but also broaden your horizon a bit and take a look around what is the need of people, what is the need of the system, and try to fit that all in.
Yeah, I think that's really important, because it's not only about that I can work on what I'm passionate about. I think science should be seen always in the bigger picture, like how can it serve society? And that may not always be immediately obvious, like with fundamental research, but it's still incredibly important that that happens, because those results can be maybe not directly applicable in 5 years, but maybe in 20 years, it can solve a problem that is societally, or is it relevant for society, or for our knowledge then. So I think all these areas are very important, but really thinking about how that could be used ultimately, it's important to me,
yeah,
at least that my research contributes in some way. Yeah.
Yeah, that's. I think that's also one of the missions of the GSLS, is that we contribute to society.
Yeah, yeah, and this definitely does.
Yeah,
and it's also a very important lesson to just take your time, step by step, to work towards a goal instead of rushing into something, and which usually doesn't work out well if you do that in research, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's perfectly fine and good to write smaller parts of that grant, maybe for smaller proposals, and oftentimes something doesn't work out, but you don't have to throw it in the bin. Like, these are really valuable ideas, and collect them over the years, and then
and we also learn, of course, from things that don't work out. That gives us information as well.
Yeah, exactly. But sometimes you also have to be persistent and believe in your own ideas. Next time you get another set of reviewers who are on the same page as you. So believe in yourself and in your ideas, and get input from others and fine-tune them over and over again.
I think that's really good, and that we don't put too much pressure on ourselves to have all the ideas worked out in one day, but take the time, and a year or 2 years for such a grant is not really crazy amount of time. It sounds like it would be normal then.
Is a crazy amount of time, but not for such a grant.
Exactly.
True. And take also criticism, I would say, because that will only improve you. Your thinking and your research. It's never a bad thing, I think, because you can see the flaws in your ideas and improve them.
Right. So it's good to integrate that perspective as well.
Yeah, definitely, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I think, a good spirit for a researcher, to be positive about, like, also suggestions from others, if we put it in a positive way. Take the critics and do something with it. And
Or nothing, but at least think about it.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
True. Well, I think it was very inspiring to listen to you, and I hope for our listeners as well, and that you inspired some students to be interested in the medical imaging program as well.
But so also to keep persistent in their dreams.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, yeah, that's true. So thank you, Chantal, for taking your time today to tell us your story.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a pleasure.
Yeah, and thank you, Marke.
Yeah, and thank you, Gizena. And of course, our listeners, thank you for tuning in again with us. And we hope to see you back, or you will hear us back the next time. And if you have any ideas to improve our podcast, just send us an email and we would love to hear about that. Thank you.
Thank you. Till next time. Radio Life Sciences. Radio Life Sciences. Radio. Welcome to the Radio Life Sciences podcast for a behind-the-scenes look into GSLS, made by students and educators for the scientists of tomorrow.